oil giant BP is now promoting tourism in the Gulf of Mexico. The company's national advertising campaign says the Gulf is a great vacation spot, despite the 2010 oil disaster. Here's a bit of one ad.
The Gulf's America's getaway spot, no matter where you go.
So come on down
and help make 2012 an even better year for tourism on the Gulf.
Brought to you by BP and all of us who call the Gulf home.
BP has paid out a little more than $6 billion to almost 200,000 claimants harmed by the oil disaster. It's also set aside more than $1 billion to restore the Gulf's ecosystem. Yet our next guest says more needs to be done, and he questions whether the Gulf will ever fully recover. Environmental writer David Gessner teaches at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. He's the author of The Tarball Chronicles, A Journey Beyond the Oiled Pelican and Into the Heart of the Gulf Oil Spill. When Gessner visited our studios recently, I asked him to describe his first trip to the Gulf.
Well, it was all pretty strange. There was definitely a through-the-looking-glass feeling that I hadn't expected. I was there for all of, about an hour when I saw a local guy from Pensacola. I was on a Pensacola beach fighting with a tourist from Texas over a giant tarball that the guy from Texas wanted to bring home as his souvenir. And the Texas guy's little girl was swimming in the oily water, and she came out and said, if that guy takes Daddy's tarball, he's going to kick his butt. That evening, I went to kind of a command center where it looked like a scene out of the Andromeda Strain. They were weighing tar and measuring it, and they were wearing hazmat suits. And a truck started backing up by me, like, beep, beep, beep. And then above, I heard, cue, cue, cue. And it was an osprey nest up above. And I guess the most startling thing, not the weirdest thing, was this constant juxtaposition of beautiful things, the osprey in its nest and the truck. Or I was bird watching and saw a roseate spoonbill like a living pink bruise by Halliburton Road. It was always this juxtaposition of beautiful things and this kind of smear of the oil. Like I saw, I went right up on the edge and it looked like a fire had gone through where the black oil had come up. I called it the necrotic fringe of the oil.
You also wrote in the book that almost everyone along the Gulf seems to have signed a deal with the devil.
Maybe that was a little strong. Well, it wasn't a deal with the devil. It was a necessary deal in a lot of cases. BP was there. You know, I had a ranger tell me it's like living in an occupied country. I saw fishermen going out, you know, old crusty fishermen going out in life preservers. And I thought, these guys haven't worn those since they were 3 years old. But those life preservers were a physical manifestation of the fact that when you signed on with BP to go herd oil, basically, you signed away your right to criticize BP. And there were some people, usually the most outspoken, who hadn't signed that deal. Ryan Lambert, who was a Cajun fishing and hunting guide, who I became friends with in very southern Louisiana, I asked him, why isn't your lodge full, like some of these other lodges with workers? And he said, I'm not going to whore out to BP.
How would you describe the state of the Gulf, then, to people who haven't been there?
You mean the state now? Well, I was down there 2 weeks ago, and I was at Bon Secour, which is a seashore in the Alabama coast. And it was so like that first day I just described. You'd had Tropical Storm Lee and then a bunch of thunderstorms, and it had kicked up a fresh crop of tarballs. And there were 40 BP workers down beyond the mist, you know, in their, not in their hazmat suits any longer, but, you know, poking it at tar and picking it up. And the talking heads line, same as it ever was, came into mind. And there's just, the scientific stuff is just starting to come out. And one of the obvious things, Samantha Joy, who is one of the few people to be doing research before, points to, you know, just massive oil on the bottom of the Gulf.
And so right now, still tarballs washing up and there's still people down there, you know, collecting all of this stuff, and this is happening as we speak. There are still very visible effects from the spill.
And this was obviously a great frustration for me. The subtitle of the book has Beyond the Oiled Pelican in it, and that's because the pelican, the oiled pelican, was kind of the cliche of the spill, right? You know, we all cried and saw that, and it was like the Indian in that 70s ad with the garbage thrown on the side of the road. When I was down there, I think it was 42 or 43% of CNN's coverage was on the Gulf. That fell off a cliff right after, you know, the capping. And suddenly it was probably 0.0004. And, you know, it just gave me an idea of how we tell our stories now, how we've got kind of national ADD. Like, we were so focused on the Gulf, now we've completely forgotten it. The next thing was the tsunami then the Tea Party. You know, we get it really into something, and then boom, it's gone.
Right.
During the fall after I came back, as the news reports got more and more optimistic, I remember going back down and talking with Ryan Lambert, the Cajun fishing guide, and he said, I'll tell you, they're saying it's okay. It's not okay. I've seen 6 fish kills this fall. I've seen 1 in my previous 30 years here. And then he took me out back and he showed me 200 pounds of shrimp, picked up one of the shrimp, and had a little ink stain on the gills. And he said, every one of these shrimp has that ink stain. I went to the authorities. They told me it's black gill disease. He said, well, that's fine, except I've been here 30 years and I've never seen this before.
And at least from your experience, what you've seen from being there recently and what you hear from the people who told you the stories for the book and who continue to tell you the stories now, there is real lasting damage that we should continue to be concerned about.
I would say a qualified yes. What I do know is that the longer story is starting to come out. And the longer story really focuses on dispersants and the use of core exit. Basically, a choice was made at a panic time to use massive amounts of dispersant, which sinks the oil, basically. You know, there were all these stories about it's evaporated and it's gone. Well, it didn't disappear. I mean, the oil sunk. Early on in this, when Obama was calling it the worst environmental disaster in U.S. history, there were real fears of all the marshes being covered in oil, of an Exxon Valdez that was from Texas to Florida. That did not come to pass. But because the giant obvious disaster didn't occur, doesn't mean a subtler disaster won't occur. I was with the naturalist Bill Finch on Grand Bay, and he pointed out the way something like that could manifest itself. He pointed at periwinkles that were on the marsh grass, and he said these would chew down the grass, except fortunately, blue crabs come in and prey on them. Well, blue crabs at the time, and 95% of them showed traces of dispersant. Now, so far, so good. It hasn't happened. But what if 2 years from now, that population nosedives? Then they don't prey on the periwinkles. You know, they eat down the marsh. And then the fishermen in Bayou La Batre nearby don't have the fish who come from the nursery of the marsh. So it's those kind of connections. I'm not saying that will happen. But, you know, nature is such a miraculous kind of symphony of interconnections. You can't mess with things in the way we've messed with them and expect to still get the, you know, things to happen the way they've always happened.
David Gessner is the author of The Tarball Chronicles. Thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.